Kenneth, how you doing?
Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to U-Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Network. Providing unbiased opinions on all things U-Talk football and basketball.
All right, everybody. Welcome to episode 37 of the U-Talk podcast. This is Joseph Silverschweig. Grant is out, so I am here with Kenneth Scott. How you doing, Kenneth?
You know, I'm doing awesome, man. I can't complain. I'm blessed, man. I can't complain.
Good. So you're in Houston now, right? Is everything kind of recovered from the hurricane? You guys doing all right over there? I know you had some trouble, though.
Yeah. You know, the city, you know, it's still repairing and stuff like that. But my end is pretty well. We've been able to maintain and not get a lot of the backlashes, more of the downtown inner city, like the downtown part has gotten. But we was able to get through it and not too much flooding on our end, so we were good.
Good. That's good to hear. So let me talk a little bit about what we're going to talk about today. We're going to run around the Pac-12 a little bit, talk about some of the scores, and then we're going to jump right into USC. We're going to talk about that game, what it was like, any takeaways from it. And then we're going to ask Kenneth to kind of answer some questions that we got from some of our listeners and just sort of break down the season as a whole. Since we don't get Kenneth in every week, I want to get a sense of what he thinks of everything that's been going on. And then we'll make some picks and talk about ASU for a minute. First, just a quick rundown of the Pac-12 scores.
Mm-hmm.
You had any games that you were watching this weekend besides the Utah game, Ken?
I was watching a few games, but here and there. But that USC game, man, it got all my attention. But you know, I just checked out, you know, just a couple of games. I wanted to see that Washington game, just because, I just wanted to see if Washington was really, like, you know, the real deal. I was checking in on a Stanford game, you know, to see if, you know, how our loss compares to that, you know, and how they dealt with that. So, you know, there's been a lot of shockers, you know, so the Pac-12, man, is definitely, it's a mystery every week. You don't know what's going to happen.
It was a wild one. So, yeah, we had Cal on Friday night that beat number 8 Washington State, and they just beat them. They beat them 37-3. You're right. It's the Pac-12, and anybody can beat anybody. But a 34-point win like that, God, Cal didn't look that good last week. That was a wild one. It was nice to kind of get a chance to see it on Friday. And then we had another top 10 go down when Washington lost to Arizona State on Saturday night. And you said you watched that game, Ken. But what did Arizona State do to slow down Washington's offense that other teams hadn't been able to do? Because Washington only came away with 7 points that game.
Yeah, you know, the thing about Arizona State, you know, their defense is very risky, you know. So they throwing a lot at you, you know what I mean? You have to be able to think on your feet. You know, so they just throwing it at you. You know, they have a high risk, but a high reward as well. You know, so if they get there, they got you, you know. And so what really beats Arizona is, like, in Arizona State, you know, you got to – when they're doing their blitzes and stunts and different things like that, you got to make sure you know your read, know where your ball is going so you can hurry up and get it out, because a lot of times they bring more guys than you can block. So you got to hurry up and make your decision and try to think what they're doing. So, you know, it's pretty tough.
Yeah, and then we had Stanford, who, I mean, wiped the floor with Oregon. Oregon was starting to look like a pretty good team, and then their quarterback gets injured. And I thought they were going to be okay, but these last 2 weeks, they have just not looked good. You said you watched that one. I thought that made Utah's 3-point loss look pretty good, given that they were able to blow out Oregon like that.
Yeah, you're right. And just, I'm with you. Like, Oregon, you know, before the quarterback got injured, you know, I thought they were gonna do real good things this year. You know, I mean, they still have a chance. It's still early on, like in the midway part. But you know, I really, before that quarterback got hurt, I really thought they had a chance. But Stanford, oh my God! Bryce Love, like, before, I used to be like, you know, maybe it's the system, because every year they have like that running back that always goes off. It's been like 7-8 years, almost a decade, a running back does this type of work no matter what. And so I was like, maybe he's just part of the system next to villain. But the dude is actually like really nice. Like
he's a cut above. Huh? He is so fast. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. And it's crazy how he made us forget about McCaffrey just like that.
He's not as multiple as McCaffrey. What's cool thing about McCaffrey is he was receiving the ball and he was returning punts. But man, Bryce Love hits a hole and he is just gone. He's got 9 50-yard runs on the season, which is tied for the most 50-yard runs for any running back in a season. And he's only halfway done. They're still going to play 6 or 7 more games, Steph. So he's really on his way to a record-setting season. And I wish some people were staying up late and watching this guy, because I think he's putting together a Heisman-type campaign with these long runs.
You know what's weird is that all it takes is 1 year. You know what I mean? Like, nobody really knew of him, you know, last year because of McCaffrey, really.
Uh-huh.
And then this year, he's just exploding onto the scene. And I just feel like all it takes is 1 year to have a good season, and you can be on the NFL radar. That's all it takes.
For sure. And then we had Colorado. They beat Oregon State, but only by 3 points, and they were trailing right up until about the last second. I don't know what happened to Colorado between last year and this year, but they just don't look like the same team.
Man, you're not lying about it. You're not lying.
You there, Ken? Did I lose you? I think we may have lost Ken. Let me what's going on?
Oh, I'm here.
Oh, hey. Yeah. All right.
My bad. Yeah, I was saying, you know, looking at Colorado, you know, from last year, I'm like, man, like their receiving core was just ridiculous with Bryce Bobo, Shea Fields, Devin Ross. You know, I'm like, ooh, they nice. And then this year, you know, they're still doing good, but it's not as what they were doing last year. Offense isn't wowing anybody like they did last year.
Uh-huh. And then we got UCLA and Arizona. And all I can talk about every week is just UCLA cannot stop anybody from running the ball. Khalil Tate had 230 yards and 2 touchdowns to go as 347 last week, but UCLA just can't stop anyone, and it just seems like fundamentals. It just seems like they're not tackling, they're not where they're supposed to be, and they certainly have the talent. It baffles me that UCLA doesn't win more games than they do with later.
Yeah, it is ridiculous, and because they get the pick of the litter, really. You know, UCLA is one of those schools that, you know, if you offer a kid, you're already on the kind of his top of the list in a way, and you ain't really got to do too much but sell him on a little thing here, a little bit thing here, and that's it. And it is amazing to me, like, man, you got all these athletes, and, you know, you should be doing way better than what you're doing. You know, you don't know if it's coaching, you don't know if it's, you know, not putting the players in the right position, the system. You don't know what it is. You know, you got athletes out there. Like, you know what I mean?
All right. Well, I got that. I mentioned to some of my Twitter followers that you were going to be on the podcast, and they had a couple of questions for you. Let me see here. So I heard that you've been watching Game of Thrones lately.
Yeah.
So are you through? It's a lot of TV to take in. Are you through? Are you all the way caught up to everything?
My fiance told me to wait till she comes down here Houston to watch season 7. So I haven't watched season 7.
Okay.
But I'm caught up.
what's the most shocking moment for you through the first 6? Everybody loves Game of Thrones around here.
Man, so the most shocking is let's see. Oh, man. It's the most shocking was that the little girl, I think her name was Ari. Little girl named Ari. And the big old bodyguard dude. The hound. There we go.
Yeah.
It's
all
crazy
right.
How he's getting a soft spot. It seemed like he's getting a soft spot for her.
Uh-huh,
and I was like, dang, he's like this hard dude, but he's getting a soft spot. It's crazy. And then the other thing was weird to me how Jon Snow, man, that's my favorite character, Jon Snow. I love it.
Uh-huh.
And I already heard the spoiler, how he him and his cousin or his auntie, you know. And I'm like, oh, man.
A little inappropriate there. Yeah, PG podcast.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And so that they kind of ruined that one for me because I was trying to wait, you know, but people were blowing it. But, you know, the show is awesome, man. I love the show.
Yeah. All right. Let's see what else we got here. A couple more. So something that people have been talking about, and this maybe isn't going to be as much of a point as it has been, but people have been noticing there seems to be a little bit of a lack of chemistry between Troy Williams and Darren Carrington, which is surprising because they knew each other in high school, and Williams is actually a big reason why Carrington wound up picking the U. What do you do to improve the relationship and the chemistry between a quarterback and a receiver? I mean, you and Travis Wilson seem to have a pretty good relationship and the ability to kind of find each other, and you knew where you needed to be, and he kind of knew where you were going to be when you really needed the, you know, the yards. Is there something that you did to do that? I mean, is that just practice time? Did you do stuff after? I mean, did you get together after practice or at other times and just kind of run around, throw the ball, and get used to each other's timing? Or what builds that? Or does anything build it, or is it just something that happens?
Yeah, I mean, with that type of stuff, you got to remember, Troy Williams, you know, he's been running with the twos, you know, for most of the time. And it's been Tyler Huntley really just getting this chemistry with the receivers, with the ones and stuff like that. And so, you know, it's kind of hard in a way because it's like you're throwing to you're not really in a game mode with these guys. You're in practice. Practice is different than a game, and you're not used to you're not used to the game speed with the ones because he was with the twos this whole time.
Uh-huh.
But if you see from the Stanford game to the USC game, you know the chemistry with his other receivers, like the receivers, gotten better, and that's now awesome. And also one thing as well to note, for the Stanford game and this USC game, a lot of times Darren Carrington wasn't coming in the game until like third down, like those passing downs. So like first and second, he would be sitting out. They'll have Braylon in, they have Siosi on the other side.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So moving kind of into the USC game, there's been a lot of criticism of not finding Carrington maybe as often as they should. I didn't really feel that way watching the game. I felt like there were a few passes where he found Carrington and Carrington didn't make the catch, which happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously that 2-point conversion, he was open back there. And that hurts to see. But do you feel like there was something missing there in terms of that connection, or is that just kind of the way it sounds like you're saying that's just kind of the way the game goes sometimes?
Yeah, it does, because there's a lot of times where there's a lot of receivers open in the game, but the quarterback may not see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just the nature of the game.
And then with receivers, you know, you don't even know what route the quarterback's supposed to be receiving, and they may leave a guy open because they know what the play is. They know the quarterback's not going to look to him. I actually think on that one, the key receiver was running out left. I think it was a tight end who was kind of dragging across the formation who was supposed to get the pass.
So, like, that play right there, I mean, I looked at it, like, I know, like 20 times, and I'm like, you know, so at the beginning of the play, he said, hi, boom. When he was dropping back looking, Darren Carrington was still on that left side of the field. He hasn't crossed all the way over yet. And then Troy ran off and was like, oh, shoot, because he felt like he didn't have enough time. So then he ran off and tried to make a score to the pylon. And I understand him because, like, in his mind, he's like, okay, I can't take a sack. I got to get the ball. And whatever went on in his mind, you know, pressure the moment, you know, they know that, you know, people are coming after him. So he's dropped back, and Carrington's still on the left side, like, trailing him behind. And he's looking like that, and he's like, if you look at the picture, I wish I would have screenshotted it. It was like a big old mush in a lot of people over there. And you got to remember, Troy isn't the tallest quarterback. So you can't, it's hard to see, like, and it's congested because it's in the red zone. And so I don't really fault him because it's a lot easier said than done. So when Troy was looking, he was still on the left side in that congestion over there. Then he was like, oh, shoot, well, I got to go make a play. So that's when he sprinted to the pylon and was running. I mean, granted, in that time, if he would have looked up, he probably would have seen Darren right there. He would have if he would have looked up. But in that time, all he was thinking about was, shoot, I got to get that to that pylon to score the touchdown. So you can't really – because if he would have – say he would have ran to the pylon, he looks up, and he gets sacked. And they're like, well, why he didn't keep running to the pylon? He was right,
right
there.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, I
can't – all about what the result, right? Everybody – it was interesting following it on Twitter. Nobody had anything to say about going for two until they didn't get it. That everybody was sure it was a terrible decision. But if
right.
he got it, you know, everybody's cheering. That's just kind of the way it goes in football, I think, is that you got to not be scared of that judgment. I mean, I wouldn't have looked up if I was running to the pylon and there's those USC linebackers trying to kill me. I would just close my eyes and pray.
Yeah, you know,
so
I felt so bad for him, man. I felt so bad for Troy.
It was a great game, huh?
It was, man. He was doing good. And it's like, all his little minor mistakes get like so like blown out of proportions. Like, oh, he sucks. He's not. I'm like, man, like one little mistake and he like written off. But last year y'all was hooping and hollering about.
I'm with you, Kenneth. Let's echo Kenneth here. So everybody takes a little easy at Troy Williams. He had a pretty good game. It's not easy to score four touchdowns on USC, and he did it, man. I mean, he did almost everything they asked of him, except for a couple of plays. And, you know, he does some great stuff, and he's a good player. And I mean, to have him as backup QB is, I think, a pretty darn good situation to be in. But it sounds like Tyler Huntley is coming back.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think? Yeah, people talk a lot about the mobility of Tyler Huntley, and I think everybody knows that he's a good runner. What's the difference between Huntley as a passer and Williams as a passer, and how does that help Utah's offense here against ASU?
Thing about Huntley is what he does a little bit more. I'm not going to say he's, like, really, really better than Troyette, but the thing he does more is that when he's out on the run, he does keep his head up. Like,
uh-huh.
He does keep it, like, because he's really good throwing on the run. So, like, when he's running, like, he's actually looking to throw, too. So, you know, that's one of his good characteristic traits because he can throw – he throws, like, ropes on the run, which is, like, pretty impressive. I'm like, wow. So, you know, that's where I see he's a little bit better than Troyette just because he keeps his head up, you know, while he's running on the run. But Troy, you know, he's good. He's good. He's a good quarterback. Come on, still.
Yeah. And you were talking about ASU being aggressive and needing to be kind of quick at decision-making. I think that's something that Troy Taylor's offense is well-suited to deal with because there's a lot of short routes. And actually, let me ask you a more specific question. Do you see hot routes in the offense, or do you think that the hot routes are kind of built in? And for listeners who don't know what a hot route is, it's when you read a blitz and a route sort of gets added to the structure of the play that's intended to be really quick and easy for the quarterback to throw. Usually it'll be a running back or a tight end just kind of leaking out and turning around. And if a blitzer is coming at the quarterback, it's sort of a safety valve for him. Do you see that in the plays? I mean, that is, are they adding in hot routes when they read a blitz, or are they just intended to deal with the blitz kind of with the routes that are already there?
So what tends to happen is we have, like, a lot of conversion routes during different type of coverages. Like, so
okay.
It's already implemented within, you know
okay.
what I mean? So if you have, say, if I'm an outside receiver and I have a hitch on, if I have a hitch and the defense is in cover two, then my hitch converts to a go route. If I have a hitch and the defense is pressed up man-to-man on me, then I have a go route. If I have a hitch and the defender is pressed on me but he fails, I keep that hitch on. So it's a lot of, you know what I mean? It's a lot of, it depends, it's very dependent on what the defense gives you and how you're supposed to run your routes, things like that. So that's like that hot routes within the.
So the hot routes are running through the receiver then, rather. It's not the quarterback calling for a hot route, it's the receiver's route changes as what the defense does shift.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And do you think that that's well-suited to deal with what Arizona State's doing? Are there going to be short passes available for Huntley or Williams when Arizona State blitzes, which is pretty much every time?
Yeah, basically. They do a lot of – they try to do a lot of disguise and to mess with you. So the receivers in this game just got to be – you know, on their P's and Q's, like, no, who's going? You got to know their tendencies. Like, okay, he's going to blow out the edge, or he's acting like he blitzed, but he's really going to go out to the flat. So you just got to know, you know, their tendencies and, you know, when they're bluffing and things like that to catch them off guard. So that's – because there's going to be a lot of holes in the passing lane, you know, so there's not that many people on coverage, really. So, you know, it's just all about making the right decisions and basically taking what the defense gives you because, you know, they bring in more than – it's like backyard football. They really bring in more than you can block. So,
How do you think the game is going to go? Do you have a score prediction? Do you have a sense of what's going to happen with it?
I think we're going to get the win. It's hard to say because I ain't going to lie. Balaj, that dude's a beast, man. And I know our defense is – he's heck smart. Like, he's heck good. And I know our defense is tough. Our defense is tough. They're not going to – but, like, the other – like, Richards is good, too. The quarterback is elusive, and he's mobile. And we tend to have a little bit of hard times against mobile quarterbacks. You know, they give us a little bit more, you know, harder time than, you know, sit back pocket times. You know, I think we're going to fare well. Defensive-wise, I think our offense is going to put up big points if we just be aggressive in the pass game. Because the run game is going to be – it's going to be kind of hard. But as soon as you break to the second level in the run game, it's over. Because it's you and the DB and Moss is going to run somebody over. But
yeah, he had a good game against USC. He was finally running like that savage guy that we've been looking for from the beginning of the season.
Yes, he has. And when the way he trucked Cameron Smith, I said,
oh, that was
so
good. That was very bad. Too fast. So what's your score prediction then for the game?
I'm going to say 28-17 Utah.
All right. Do you feel like the Utes have met your expectations for this season, exceeded them, maybe undercut them a little bit? How do you think they're doing?
Honestly, I didn't really have too much expectation because everything was so new, like as far as the offensive side. I was a question mark. I'm like, well, if they do what Eastern Washington did, then it will balance out and we'll be really good. But now I'm looking, I'm like, you know, they didn't meet our expectations. You know, people were probably saying like 7-8 wins. I mean, they're going to get 7-8 wins easily.
Yeah.
As far as my expectations was always just looking up on the offense and the offense, I believe so far, just based off last game, I think they went over expectations, to be honest with you, with the pass game. Just because they're getting the ball in the different playmakers' hands, I believe it was like, so it's due to like six, seven different receivers, but nobody talked about that. Like, nobody talked about that. I'm like, why nobody talk about choice on?
Well, because we lost by one instead of winning by one. Like all the bad stuff instead of the good stuff. Yeah, there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 receivers he threw to, and then of course Troy Williams caught a touchdown pass. Speaking of red zone offense. Well, all right, Kenneth, I just wanted to chat with you for a few minutes and give you a chance to catch up with some of the Ute fans. I know they love to hear from you, and hopefully we'll have you on again some other point here later on in the season. Thanks again for dropping by, and you have a good night, and go Utes.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I appreciate you so much. Thank you.
Sure thing. Bye, Kenneth. All right, well, that was Kevin Scott. That's kind of everything we have. I think if I'm going to throw up a prediction for ASU, I'm probably going to say Utah 31, ASU 24. I think Utah's going to win, but maybe not beat the spread. And that's all we've got for you. I hope you guys have a good night. Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Network. Find us on Twitter @UteTalkPodcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.